Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature the top experts on all things tax to help you understand, navigate, and resolve all your tax-related issues. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hi, I'm Alan Rolnick, the host of the Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature guests and talk about issues from all walks of life, from taxes to health to economics, personal finance, sales and marketing, employment, and many more that are too numerous to name. Past guests on the show have been Jeffrey Schneider, Eric Cohen, Adrian Miller, Sylvie Heyman, Alex Kuhn, Evan Rabin, Samuel Wiener, Robert Hernandez, Nancy Schick, and Jerry Nyland. This episode is brought to you by Tri-State Tax Resolution. Owe the IRS or your state tax department money, or have not filed a tax return for more than 2 years? The IRS and your state tax department are looking for you. They want to throw you a party. This party is not to celebrate your birthday, anniversary, engagement, or wedding. This party is being made to levy your wages up to 90%, take your Social Security check up to 85%, seize your bank account and other things that you own, revoke your passport. To stop this party in its tracks, you need to call the Tax Resolution Hotline at Tri-State Tax Resolution 718-841-7317. You see, Tri-State Tax Resolution runs a tax emergency room that helps people and businesses permanently resolve their tax problems. Tri-State Tax Resolution will do the heavy lifting for you, and you will never have to speak to an IRS or state tax agent. If you owe the IRS and or the state tax department where you live and work, give Tri-State Resolution Tax Resolution a call. They will resolve your tax problem permanently, and you will not have to go to the party that the IRS and your state tax department of taxation are throwing for you. To stop the party, call Tri-State Tax Resolution at 718-841-7317 or visit their website at www.tristatetaxresolution.com. I have here with me today Fernando Coats, founding partner of Gleason Coats Attorneys. Fernando is a business and real estate lawyer in New York, representing both foreigners and U.S.-based clients. Thank you, Fernando, for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you for inviting me.
So let's start at the beginning. Why did you become an attorney?
Well, aside from the fact that my parents wanted me to be a lawyer because I ended up not being a doctor, I wanted to be a lawyer because I want to do the kind of things I'm doing now as in my practice, which is directly advising the owners of small businesses, investors, individuals, and the like with respect to their matters here in New York. I like the one-on-one, the give and take, and giving advice and earning the trust that these people have when they want someone to help them to the best of his or her own ability.
Okay, so a client comes to you and they want to open up a new business. What are the things they have to do?
Well, first, when they want to open a new business, I talk about working as a team. It isn't just me, the lawyer. You need the CPA, someone like you. You need the insurance broker. You need possibly a real estate broker and so forth. So I say, make sure you have that team together, the people who will be able to advise you, because I can give a lot of advice, but it will always be incomplete given so many things that you have to take into account for a business. And what do you need? You need to determine what kind of structure or entity you want. That's not always strictly a lawyer's decision. There's a tax component to that, whether it's an LLC, an S corporation, or a C corp. Where do you want to incorporate? In New York or Delaware? That's one of the biggest questions. Or Florida or New Jersey? Where do you want to have your location? Now, because of the pandemic, that's a different issue. But before the pandemic, do you want to have an office, a representative office? Do you need to rent? Do you need to lease? I can assist with that, but I can't find the location. It's not my job. You're going to need insurance. I go over all these things with my clients, whether foreigners or U.S.-based.
What's the difference between forming a business in New York or forming one in Delaware?
The big difference is taxation. And again, I'm not speaking to step on your toes as the brilliant CPA that you are, but for me, as speaking as a lawyer, Delaware is very corporate friendly, but it seems to be it's more useful on a national scale. In other words, if you want to do business, going to be in most of the 50 or all 50 states of this country, you should be in Delaware. But if you're going to be more local in New York, mostly or exclusively, it really doesn't make that much of a difference, putting aside strict tax considerations that you incorporate in New York.
Okay. So you deal with a lot of foreigners. What are the problems that they have when they want to open up a business?
Well, they have first of all, they have to know what kind of visa they need in order to work here, which is another part of that so-called team I talk about, an immigration lawyer. So let's say we have the right visa if they want to physically come here and open the business. It's going to be also understanding the culture, legal and litigious culture, and understanding that you need insurance. For example, if you're manufacturing or producing or importing or exporting to the United States products that are subject to product liability, you have to know you run a risk of being sued. So I have to explain the way we are in our system. We are much more litigious society than other countries. So I try to explain that, how you protect yourself, what you have to do with employees. A lot of things can be done abroad that can't be done here. The way you treat an employee, you can't ask questions as to their national, religious, or sexual orientation. You have to be careful. You need an agreement. And you have to be, if there's no union involved, you have to understand the consequences if you want to fire an employee, which in New York, by the way, is at will. It's a lot more open than in other countries or other states.
All right, firing an employee, technically is at will, but you get into all sorts of trouble if you don't do it the right way.
Absolutely, and that's why, again, I'm not an employment lawyer, but I know enough to be careful the way the situation is structured and developed. You really do need some kind of contract or agreement. And that applies as well to the executives or any managerial positions you want to fill in. Have a contract, try to line up things as much as possible, because a contract, and I'm speaking really as a lawyer now, is a roadmap. It should guide you through most situations that may arise, both positive and negative, with respect to whatever relationship the two parties have, including employer-employee.
Okay. So in some cases, I know when you set up a corporation and you're the sole owner and there's no other employees, is it necessary to have disability insurance and workman's compensation?
If you're the sole owner, no, it's not necessary to have workman's compensation. Workers' compensation really comes in when you do have employees, and especially if they're working at the premises, assuming that people go back to their offices now. Working remotely is another situation which is going to create a lot of questions if someone suffers some kind of disability or has an issue while working from home.
Okay. So let's go on to a different topic. You're involved in a lot of real estate deals.
Yes.
Do you encourage the use of the Section 1031, which is a like-kind exchange?
Well, like-kind exchange, it really applies only to properties held as an investment. So if someone owns a residence, for example, I own a co-op apartment, I will not be able to avail myself of a 1031 exchange if I sell it and buy a property that's similar. But if it's an investment, and this applies to foreigners, if they own a U.S. property and they want to sell it and legally avoid the capital gains tax, which is what the 1031 exchange is based upon Section 1031 of the Internal Revenue Code, you can avoid that or postpone that capital gain as long as you keep on exchanging it. So yes, I think it's a good idea, but there are a lot of timelines and strict guidelines that have to be respected. The most important ones are that you have to identify a property within 45 days of the sale, if it's a forward exchange, and running concurrently 180 days to have the closing. Those are strict guidelines. If they're not respected, the person will lose the benefit of the like-kind exchange.
Does the foreigner have to be a resident of the United States?
Not at all. Has to own property. It could be Florida, for example, and they want to sell a property for the sake of argument for $100,000 and buy a property in New York for $100,000. They can do that. Not a problem at all.
All right, but they themselves don't have to be a resident. They can live in Paris.
Yes, lucky them. Yes, they could live in Paris.
Okay, so they can. I don't know if it's so lucky these days.
It's a beautiful city. That's all I meant to say.
Yeah. Okay, so any unusual cases that you've had, you know, recently that I don't know, that might tweak the interest of our audience?
Well, I have an interesting commercial real estate sale that I'm involved with out of Astoria. My clients own the corporation that their shareholders in own a taxi medallion venue, which, because taxis have suffered greatly even before the pandemic because of Lyft and Uber, are in a situation. The location where the property is a taxi medallion business. And because Uber and Lyft before the pandemic, and because of the pandemic, taxi medallions have become, or the licenses and the whole industry started to cave in precipitously. They wanted to sell their property to their next door neighbor that wants to tear down that property and build a market rate apartment for tending to be luxury. And the way it was structured is that there are actually five shareholders. Two are the stepsons, are the sons of the first marriage of the person who died owning that corporation. And the other three have a trustee in their mother, who was the stepmother of the first two and is the second wife. The problem is that everybody's in debt, and the two stepsons, or the two or older ones, are in bankruptcy court. So we've had bankruptcy court lawyers, we've had trust and estate lawyers, we have corporate lawyers. Everyone's been involved in this deal. And the contract was actually signed after the lockdown began on March 25th with the expectation that bankruptcy court would approve the sale involving the two older sons, who would become members of the new corporation that was buying the property. But the lender, which is a hard, hard lender with a very difficult lawyer, says, no, we see something crazy going on here, something subterfuge, possible fraud, because aside from the purchase price, there's what's called an upzoning bonus that if and when the Department of Buildings approves, now this gets into air rights and zoning, which is a very complicated area of the law, approves the new building that they want to build higher than the rest of the building in the surrounding area to be luxury rentals, there'll be a bonus paid to the sellers. And the lender's lawyer in bankruptcy court made all sorts of accusations. I had to participate by telephone conference because no one was going to court. I mean, it's a fascinating case or matter. We are still waiting for bankruptcy approval. The deal is in jeopardy because the purchasers have a commitment letter which will soon run out. So we're scrambling to get this deal done. But it's really interesting because it involves a lot of aspects of law, not just real estate, corporate, trust, estates, and bankruptcy law.
The interesting thing about the bankruptcy is that it may not necessarily relieve the client of his obligation to pay his taxes.
Yes, that's true. But that's not, to be honest with you, I mean no disrespect. It's a minor issue compared to the bigger one of getting this deal through so we can have a closing. So yes, and the whole point is reach some kind of compromise through mediation, and that's very difficult as well.
You know, a lot of taxi owners these days have actually in trouble. The medallions that they paid, you know, $1 million for are like down the sewer.
Absolutely. But their lenders are very hard. They want their money back.
You know, I noticed there was a place on Queens Boulevard. If you go down towards Woodside, there was a place that they were loaning the money for the taxi drivers to buy the medallions. And now they're gone. I mean, that building just is empty.
And that's a situation with this client in this commercial deal. As I said, it's fascinating, but it's a very difficult deal. And because it's difficult, I like doing it. I get into it, so to speak. It's a hairy, a deal with a lot of hair on it. But
you know, the other thing is that one of the credit unions down the other end, they had loaned a lot of them. They actually gave out a lot of loans and for taxi medallions. The government came in and shut them down, and now they're owned by another credit union. I mean, it's just a mess with these things.
Absolutely, we live in crazy times, but it's not boring.
No, it's not boring. It certainly isn't. How would you advise a client who owns a piece of property, you know, he's renting out the one of the floors in their building. They also have garage space, and in the garage, the garage sometimes floods with water because of the way the property was built. They're attached buildings, and all the water goes down to the end when it rains, and sometimes the sewer can't take it fast enough. Garage floods, and guy's got his Mercedes in the garage. The Mercedes unfortunately gets damaged. He wants to sue the landlord. How do you get out of a situation like that?
As a landlord?
As a landlord.
Well, the landlord's first is going to have to file a claim with their insurance carrier, because there should be some kind of insurance to cover that situation. And then insurance carrier will defend the landlord And because what happens when there's insurance, the insurance carrier usually appoints its own lawyer. So the landlord may have his or her own lawyer or its lawyer if it's a corporation, but they'll generally defer, have no choice to defer to the insurance carrier's lawyer. But the defense is going to be, I don't know what notice the landlord had, whether this is a regular occurrence, whether the landlord was negligent or was gross negligence. All these different things come into play with respect to how the insurance carrier may or may not even cover or pay for those damages. So if I'm the landlord, I'm going to make sure that I have some record. The best scenario is I never knew this. It's a very unique situation. And it wasn't. And if it did happen before, it's not my fault. It's something that has to do with the New York City sewer system, or maybe even the negligence, which is hard to prove, of the person making the claim. I mean, there are a lot of defenses you can throw out there. A lot has to do with the insurance carrier's lawyers, if they're up to the task, and what prior behavior or any notification the landlord had.
Okay. I mean, because I've been in that situation where the way the property is built, all the water comes down and the sewer only has so much capacity. And not only does the water from the rest of the property, you know, rest of the lot come down, but the water from the roof drains into the same sewer. And so you get a backup and it floods the garage. And in the meantime, we have people renting out the space, and the damn thing, you know, and no matter what we do, because I have those sewers cleaned every year, and no matter what I do, I can't stop it.
Well, the landlord should also bring in it's what's called third party claims, saying if I'm responsible wholly or in part, it's going to be also, for example, New York City, because they have a bad sewage drainage system, which they knew about this problem, they did nothing about. So then it's going to be how you divide up the responsibility, which is a determination of fact. And if it's a non-jury trial, the judge does that. If it's a jury, then they'll decide. But you hope that, God, you don't get to a jury trial, because it's very dangerous, and the landlord can be in great deal. And then, of course, the insurance carrier, if it has to make a payout and it can't collect for anyone else, it's going to make sure that they're going to increase their premium with respect to landlord, or just never insure.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, if you take it to small claims court, it depends on the judge. You could get a son of a bitch. You know, no matter what you do, you're a landlord. You're up the paddle without, you're up the creek without a paddle.
Absolutely.
So to speak.
Yes.
All right. So I got one final question for you. If you were going to be awarded, given the lifetime achievement award, who would you thank?
Is this someone that I know or relative?
No, this is you. This is you. You're being given.
Oh, I see. I apologize. I would thank really the beginning of it all. It was my parents, for all the love and support they always gave me. I would not be here. I would not be the person I am, good and bad, without their love and support. They always told me your education is the most important thing. They drummed into my head, which I believe is the best thing, unless you have God-given talent to be a baseball player or something like that, or a musician, you should go get an education. So I followed their advice, and they always supported me. We didn't always agree, but they always supported me. So I would always, and I still thank my parents for everything they did for me from the beginning until to this day.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, is coming from a Mets fan.
Yes.
A diehard Mets fan.
To the day, yeah, I bleed blue and orange, yes.
and green and white.
By the way, your colors over there are orange.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm wondering about you, Alan. Yankees fan. Okay, bring it up. And I'm a Jets fan. Yes.
Yeah.
In the season. I know all that.
I know. It's just they made a mistake picking this guy, Gaze. They really, I mean, they made a mistake. He couldn't even win in Miami. You know.
I don't know if this is part of your show, but yeah, we can get into that. You can call it.
Anything's part of my show. It's anything I want it to be.
Okay. Well, they made a bad choice in Gaze, but everyone told them that, so they have only themselves to blame.
Right. Fernando, I want to thank you for taking the time out. I really appreciate it.
And thank you for the opportunity. And if Any more questions, feel free.
You want to give you contact information?
Yes, my office number. I do go to my office every day. I'm careful, wear a mask when I take the subway and try not to touch things. My office number is 212-986-1544. And I have an awfully complicated email address, fcoats@gleason, GLEASONKOATZ, oneword.com. The name of the firm is Gleason & Coats, LLP. Thank you so much, Alan.
And please listen to past episodes, and we'll see you next time on the Tax Resolution Ninja Show. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Resolution Ninja Show. Be sure to click subscribe to get updates on our latest episodes.